About books and
stuff. Welcome to Can't Lit. We were having a very amazing conversation about recent news in quotes, story about a woman who took a shit on a Tinder date, and then it involved a lot of weird stuff going on as a result. And as listeners know, these are my favorite kind of stories. So it took us like 20 minutes to start recording because we had to take a lot of stops to talk about dumps. Beside me, who had a lot of insight on this particular story, co-host Jen Siegfong Lee.
Hi. I have a lot of thoughts about protocols on Tinder dates. I feel like I should write a book.
Yeah, that's fair. I would I would read that book, and I feel many people would be entertained by it. We have a very lovely guest, Gurjinder Basran.
Hello.
Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me. I thought everybody had heard that story about the Tinder date. Clearly my Facebook feed and the algorithm is all
You know what?
Up.
I was away this weekend and I wasn't online as much as I usually am, which is constantly. So I feel like I missed out. Yeah, the last week. It was like the first week of classes also. And that, I don't know. Well, I just feel like it affected a lot of things that were going on. I wasn't sitting in front of a computer as often as I would prefer.
I probably was. But the thing is, I didn't see the story so much. I saw the picture of this woman calling this window. And I'm like, oh, what's happening?
Yeah, how is that possible?
Was there a kitten in there?
The Coles Notes version, woman takes shit on Tinder date, toilet doesn't flush, she's at man's house who she is trying to date, fishes poop out of toilet, tries to get rid of it through the window. It was a double-paned window. The poop got stuck, and then she got stuck in the window. So if you're unfamiliar, ooh, you guys, you know what? I'm going to eat an arrow right now. I'm going to eat a tiny little arrow chocolate.
Awful. Oh, yeah.
I can eat a chocolate after any story.
I have so much sympathy for her because I feel like I've vomited on dates and like in front. In fact, I did this one time and that poor dude had to hold my hair.
Aww.
Oh, I know. And then he carried me up the stairs and brushed my teeth for me.
That's so sweet.
Yeah.
Whoa.
We're not together anymore, but it's really too bad.
No, but
he was quite sweet.
But this poop thing, you think if they can survive this, like they can do anything together.
They could.
Right? Because he went and he checked on her, like what's taking so long. He finds her in this situation. He calmly calls the fire department. Like this could be a good How I Met Your Mother story.
He's clearly not acting like a dickbag.
No.
No.
He just wants the money to replace the window.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Who doesn't really?
Yeah.
I mean, he deserves that.
Yeah.
Like to have a, you know,
a new
poop-less window.
Window.
Yeah, poop free window. You know what?
Poop free window.
A street
when,
free.
When people
free, yeah.
talk about rights and freedoms, one of the rights is poop free window, and I feel like we don't talk about that enough.
We all need poop free windows. It's true. We all need to be with someone who holds our hair when we vomit.
Yeah, all of these things.
Brushes our teeth for
yeah.
us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How was the toothbrushing? Like, was it pretty clean?
I think it was too much intimacy for a first date.
He put me on the...
Toothbrushing.
Yeah.
Oh, no, that wasn't our first date.
Oh, okay.
No, he put me... We'd been on and off for a while, but he stuck me on the... I have a stool in my bathroom because I have a son. He needs a stool to get to the sink, so he put me on the stool, and he brushed my teeth for me, and then he touched me into bed. I know. We're not together.
It's kind of nice, but weird also.
Did you say kind of nice but weird?
Yeah,
yeah,
but
that's
weird
fair.
Also.
I thought it was sweet.
Yeah.
I thought it was I don't know if he listens to this. He might be. Hey, how's it going?
Hi.
Whoever you are.
Thanks for your service.
Thank you for cleaning up my vomit.
Yeah, that's totally reasonable. Mm-hmm. So, summer is dragging its butt and it's still here, which I fully appreciate. Jen, do you want to start? What's happening?
What's happening? Well, what is happening? What has been happening the last few days is that it was just announced that Buckrider Books, which is the imprint at Woolsack and Wynn, run by the lovely Paul Vermeersch, former guest.
Yes.
Friend of the podcast.
Yes.
He's formed an editorial advisory board with me and Kinesia Lubrin and Jordan Abel to help him acquire and edit fiction and poetry manuscripts for the next few years. And it's great. And he tweeted it out on a Sunday morning, so it was a lot more action on a Sunday morning than I would have expected, but it was really great, and people are really super excited about it. And one of my jokes on this podcast is that I will never speak on another diversity panel ever again, because I'm pretty tired of it. So, because you can talk about diversity and inclusivity and like nothing ever really seems to happen, but this editorial board seems really great because we talk about this all the time, that inclusivity really has to be built into every step of the publishing process, mm-hmm. from, you know, writing programs to who works at the publishing companies to who we publish and how they get marketed and promoted. So I'm super excited, and I'm very excited to learn about publishing from that side of things, which is good because, as I keep joking, I have long-term plans to become the benevolent dictator of Camlet. So
I want to know if you're going to ask people to wear like a specific uniform.
Oh, as the benevolent dictator? Yeah. Yes, and they all have to carry little books, my books, little tiny copies of my books with them all the time.
You should get them. You should get made like a big necklace that has mini replicas on it.
Of my books?
Yeah. So like, okay. People are literally physically wearing them.
And they all have to have pictures of me in their kitchens. With little shrines.
Like, what style, what dictator style portrait would you like? Do you want to go Mao? Do you want to go Gaddafi? Like, do you want to go more old school? Like, where are your interests like, lying?
I think you should do something.
I think
like
I would
Vogue.
Like something like Cindy Sherman. Not that she's a dictator.
No, but you want to, yeah.
That's where I'm going with this.
Okay,
Cindy
I like
Sherman
this.
Styles.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that sounds great. Yeah. So essentially it would be a Cindy Sherman-like portrait of you.
Yeah.
But she would, like, maybe she would even take it. Yeah. She would, like,
it would be Cindy Sherman it. Dressed as me.
Oh, my God. I mean, I feel like she would do it.
Because I'm the dictator. She's going to do it. Mm-hmm. It's going to be, everybody's going to have a different version of Cindy Sherman dressed as me hanging in their kitchen.
I'm not against this.
I think this could be your next book cover.
Oh, sure.
Oh, that's also a good idea.
Like a Brady Bunch group.
Totally.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, like you could incorporate. Yeah, you can
or
incorporate
could be
some
author
of that.
Headshot.
Yep.
Oh, that's gonna be great. Okay, what's happening with you, Dina?
What's happening with me? I just got back from Calgary, Alberta last night.
Yeehaw.
Yep. I only saw one cowboy. Oh. You know what? I was pretty relieved. It was at a really big bar.
Okay.
And we were sitting on the patio, and so everyone else was just dressed like, you know, how they felt that day. But yeah, there was definitely one cowboy. I'm sure there was maybe a concert or something going on, because then after that, it looked like he was going to hang out with some other dudes. They didn't have hats on, but they still had, like, some tight jeans and boots.
Ooh. Like a Keith Urban concert or something?
Something. Yeah. I feel like every day in Calgary, there's a different country concert.
Could be.
Yeah, yeah. But I was there for multiple reasons. I feel like I really don't do things like go on vacation just for fun or like do a thing that's just for no reason, which is probably why my body's gonna like ruin itself in the next few years. It's gonna be like, hey, why don't you lie down for a bit? I'll be like, no thanks.
And then Dina's just a pile of dust in the corner.
I'm a benevolent pile of dust. I'm going to boss people around, and if they don't listen, I'm going to shoot right up their orifices like my dusty little self. I was asked to present at Mount Royal has a new library and learning center, which is so amazing and beautiful, and the people that organized it were really cool, and they presented all during the day. And so I was also asked to present, which is weird. Because I was like, oh, these other people like seem well-known and have TED Talks and stuff. So I don't know why you asked me to be here. This is very weird. But it was great. And I got to tour the library and it was so fancy. There were tiny pods that look like mini, like, first-class airline seats where you can, like, do work. And every station has multiple plugins and ports. So if you need to, like, charge your phone and your computer, you'd have some other device. No matter where you are, you have access to power.
Do they recline?
Those ones don't, but they were very like comfy. And then there were other pods that had like four seats. So you could like work on a group project together. Oh. Yeah. And then there were lots of gender neutral washrooms on each floor. Not everything was finished. Like it had been open throughout the summer, but there were some things that they were still finishing up. And a lot of the major like library signs were also in Blackfoot. So, like, they had done all these things just to make the library
welcoming
and just better overall, because their old library was just one big room. So this is much fancier and has so many possibilities. They had a beautiful wall on each floor that was made out of recycled skateboards. And then they gave me a little, Yeah, like, and it just looked beautiful. It was, like, very colorful. And it had sort of the name of the floor or the number of the floor in each one. And then after I did my talk, I got a little tote bag from Mount Royal. And the library also has binary code on the outside.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it's super cool. And so then it also had it on the tote bag. And then inside, there was a piece of a skateboard that you can, like, use for, like, your business cards or a photo or whatever. And it was, like, a beautiful, like, retro skateboard. Yeah, and then a infinity scarf also printed with the skateboard wall.
Shut
and I was like, everything is so cute here.
So thought out.
And so well thought out. Yeah, like, everything they did was really great. But one of the things she posted on Instagram today is that my talk was kind of about sometimes things we talk about on the podcast, aka, and we specifically talked about it on a recent episode where Bianca Spence was talking about how, like, no one actually says good things are happening. So I was like, okay, well, I'm going to talk about, like, things that actually are good or even things that are bad that are starting, that people are, like, trying to make good things happen as a result of. And so that was kind of the theme. But I talked a lot about social media because the library wanted people to talk about technology and specifically for me, the literary community and, like, kind of what I do. So one of the slides I had was four tweets from Vivek Shreya. Okay. Because I think that she, to me, exemplifies all the elements of social mediaing that are important to me, and I categorize them thusly. Number one, important stuff. So either, like, talking about important things that are going on in the world, causes, or, you know, important projects that she's working on. Two, signal boosting. She's super great at that, really generous. Three, personal, aka the selfie category. And then four, jokes, which I call the fart joke category, but the joke that she, well, not the joke, but just, like, the thing she had put out there was about, like, how many writers pick their nose while they're writing. And I was like, this is good. Like, this is funny. I feel good about this. So anyway, yeah. And then today, a friend of hers also worked at this library or in the department.
She has friends everywhere.
Yeah. Well, she's got the Calgary Connects. So anyway, he sent her a photo of it, the presentation with the tweet and me, like, pointing and doing whatever, being dramatic. And then she posted it today on Instagram being like, don't tweet about picking your nose or Dina will put it in her presentation. I was like, yeah, I did do that. Yeah. But I also got to visit my brother and sister-in-law and my nieces. They all live there. And my niece gave me a manicure with that, like, peel nail polish that is for children.
It looked great.
It looked great. She's only four, so, like, it was pretty good.
Yeah.
It did peel off. It did stain my fingernails a little bit, but I got to hang out with them a lot. My niece is super excited about my book, that I wrote a book. Like, the other three books, she didn't really get that this was a thing. Like, the first one came out right before she was born, and this time she was, like, she kept grabbing it and opening it and pretending to read it and, like, tell me about what was going on in the book.
Oh, that's so cute.
Yeah, it was super cute. And then she made me take a bunch of pictures of her with the book.
Oh, how old is she?
Four.
Oh, so
she's
sweet.
Hilarious. Yeah, she's amazing. So we spent a lot of time hanging out and just, like, yeah, she had a lot of questions about books and, like, what it is to make a book. Mm-hmm. She's like, you made a book. And I'm like, yeah, I made a book. And my younger niece is just kind of does her own thing. I was telling Jen, she has no hairline, so her hair just is in her face all the time. So it always has to get clipped up Pebbles Flintstone style.
Which is the best style.
It's super cute. But yeah, she's like walking around first thing in the morning, and it's just like, she looks like a rock star. It's like,
she's like Slash.
She's like Slash, yeah. Or like anyone in like the late 70s, just like boom, right down the front, yeah. And I did a book launch at Shelf Life Books. Much love to Shelf Life Books in Calgary. It is so amazing.
Mm-hmm.
It's a beautiful store. They carry amazing, amazing, amazing books. I could not recommend that place enough. And they really, yeah, they really made the launch super lovely. And yeah, they made like little, like a banner. Out of the individual,
oh, they did like a bunting.
Yeah, like a cute bunting,
yeah, yeah,
with
yeah.
Like cute, cute letters, yeah. And in the middle of the bunting in the book display was one of the beer cozies from my book,
so good.
That was just like on display the whole time. Anyway, they were super cute, and I read with Nikki Reimer and Shannon McGuire and Larissa Lai. So there were lots of like Vancouver connections to the Calgary event. Anyway, it was really great. This is honestly the first time I was in Calgary. Not that I disliked being there, but that I felt like I actually did things, because normally I visit my family and that's kind of it. But like,
your worlds collided.
I walked, and I stayed in a hotel one night, and then the next morning I got up and like I went shopping and I went to the Contemporary Art Gallery and I like walked around town. I'm like, oh, this is actually a city, but I never see it because I'm always in a neighborhood. Mm-hmm. Like I don't see the stuff that's going on. Anyway, I liked it. Thanks, Calgare.
Dina also spent one evening texting me selfies of herself drinking beer in a wine glass.
Yes. Jen, you're not mentioning that I was wearing a shower cap, which is my other favorite activity that I like to do in hotels. I like to put on the robe, even though I'm not showering, put on the shower cap because I don't want to waste it. Also, it looks funny.
I feel like listeners of the podcast want to know that when Dina was trying to book this hotel in Calgary, she was texting me. She's like, I don't know how to make a decision with fancy hotels. And I said, you need to check how late they do room service.
And then I did get super good room service, which I sent you a photo of. Yeah, it was really great.
All the toiletries with you?
Of course. But this place only had small toiletries that were like, it. All of the shampoo and conditioner and stuff was in big bottles.
Oh.
So that was, again, a slight disappointment. But I really do care more about like creams and lotions. So yeah. And when I'm in Calgary, I'm also just used to being super dry the whole time. So even though it was like very warm, you want to moisturize.
You need to moisturize.
You need to moisturize. Yeah. Okay. Gurjinder, what is happening?
Well, I have expanded my musical tastes.
Ooh, what?
Let's hear about it.
So there's two types of music I don't like. I do not like country. Mm-hmm. I don't include Katie Lang and Blue Rodeo in that because they are not country.
I feel like there's lots of crossover that doesn't count. Like
Stacey Chicks is okay, too.
There's lots of people that, or like Nico Case, there's like people that come from country tradition that aren't necessarily
bluegrassy,
like,
right?
going down that.
Yeah, folksy. So that's okay.
Do you have a crush on Jim Cuddy?
I do actually.
I feel like most people of a certain age have, and like Blue Rodeo,
like
have a crush
rugged,
on Jim Cuddy.
Yeah. Skinny, frail cowboy. But anyway, so
frail cowboy. It's a type. It's a type. They should put that on the Tinder categories.
Yeah.
What's like your body type? Frail cowboy.
Your jeans have to be tight, but somehow they still look loose because you're so damn skinny.
Right.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
But anyway,
like you barely have a butt.
I still don't like country.
Okay, that's fair. You don't have to.
And the other category I wasn't listening to was rap. Mm-hmm. So I always grew up on indie alternative, still listen to alternative music, raised my kids to listen to alternative music, but my youngest listens to rap and hip hop. And
what age?
He's 15.
Okay.
And so I figured he was rebelling against us a bit. But he started to get me to listen to it, and I'm like, oh, this isn't so bad. And, you know, I can get over the bitches and hoes and all that. It's pretty good. So he made me a playlist, and now I'm like super fangirling. It started with Drake because, you know, he's the gateway drug into rap, hip-hop, genre bending. And now, like, I'm full into, like, Frank Ocean. And,
Frank Ocean is great.
You know, Tyler, the Creator. I'm like, yeah. So I'm feeling...
Your son has good taste,
yeah, he does. Mm-hmm. He does. Mm-hmm. So I'm feeling kind of cool again. Like, I'm feeling like cool mom. In fact, I overheard them talking that, wow, your mom's pretty cool.
No. Like his friends?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, exactly.
Did you go and celebrate with something? Have a glass of champagne?
Oh, I danced down the hallway as I was, you know, vacuuming in my suburban
mom
life.
You were like, I'm not a regular mom. I'm a cool mom. I'm doing the cool mom dance.
Exactly.
That's really great.
It was.
It's good to discover these things about ourselves.
Yeah, and apparently I can change. I thought I was just going to be the Cure Joy Division mom stuck there forever.
Change.
We can all grow.
We can all grow. I agree.
Yeah. So.
Especially I feel like if someone you respect is giving you recommendation or you like over here, then it's obviously you like your son.
It's good.
But like I think that helps.
It's good. And they all play this game where it's amazing to me that they can come up with these bars and lines. Like they can rap instantaneously.
Yeah.
Whereas I would have to sit down with a notebook for about 6 hours and come up with some good rhymes where they can just like spit them out. It's quite amazing. Yeah.
I'm loving this conversation right now.
Yeah. I'm trying to find...
My Twitter feed is like 25% rap.
Oh, well, I'm trying to find a rhyme right now, but see, I can't find it. I'll find it in like 6 hours and then I'll call you and say, hey, can you add this in?
You'd be like, we'll drop it in.
Yeah, we'll drop it in.
We'll drop it in.
Yeah.
That's pretty exciting. That's like a big moment
for
you.
It's pretty cool. I mean, it's my playlist all the way here. Yeah.
That's really great.
Drake really is the hot dad of hip hop.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I think so.
Yeah. There's something about him in those turtlenecks.
Yeah.
But I feel like also there's, you know, a level of like vulnerability in all of those artists' work.
There's longing. Mm-hmm.
Thing. Yeah.
If you're looking at Tyler, the Creator, and Frank Ocean.
Well, and they're doing some really surprising things with music. It's just not, it's not straight rap that I grew up with. And so the instrumentals, tracks that they're laying down, the mixing that they're doing, and even though they're just getting away from the normal, you know, verse, chorus, verse of songs.
Mm-hmm.
So there's always like some kind of nice surprise, like, oh, where did that come from? Is this a different song? And yet it's the same thing.
Yeah, it's really cool. I mean, people have been talking about this for years, but it is so akin to poetry and like mm-hmm. also in some ways follows the same trends
yeah.
as poetry. Like so many poets are influenced by rap and hip hop yeah. artists and like what they're doing and the modes that they're using. So,
well, I think
that checks out.
Because we grew up, if you're talking about like indie music and stuff, and we grew up with the idea of folk music being protest music, mm-hmm. but really protest music is rap.
Yeah. True.
I once did a lecture on that, and I really didn't know what I was talking about, but it was cool. Nobody noticed. And the rap being protest music, I think, is really fascinating to me. And the whole how that works and talking about things like, people who don't like rap will often say that they don't like the bragging that goes into it or
the misogyny.
Materialism. Like, people will talk about how much money they're making or whatever. But, you know, my whole thesis for this really funny lecture I did was that the bragging about having stuff is protest in and of itself. It's subversive for people who grew up not having stuff,
mm-hmm.
right? So having the stuff is a big deal, and bragging about it and being able to say, this is my place in the world, this is the stuff that I have that I earned for myself, boom, fuck.
And
fuck
also,
drop the mic.
I think it's important for us to remember that, like you just said, misogyny, which is of course true, but also there's so much, you know, music that is produced that is extremely misogynistic all the time.
It's
like
just not
songs
in your
face. Exactly. Yeah. And it's just, it's coming in a different package. It's
I'm
coming in a
about
different
you,
tone.
Ed Sheeran.
Yeah. That's 100% fair. Yeah. Or like so many songs that we listened to in the late 80s and early 90s that were considered romantic songs.
Oh,
but that
everything
really
is like
were
so
just
wrong.
Like about how, listen, baby, I'm really like the best one. And just like horrible male manipulation.
Stalking.
Stockholm syndrome. Like totally. That was the tenor of the romantic songs we were delivered, you know? And so because they came in this sweeter package, like how many people walked down the aisle to More Than Words, which is really such a gross song. You know people did.
I'm thinking about
I'm
that
like
song
singing
now.
It in my head.
Yeah.
Oh, is it Extreme?
Yeah,
Extreme, More Than Words, which is really just a song about like, listen, if you don't fuck me, you don't love me. Like, that is basically what the song
is
saying.
Even, really?
I've never
to
even
me, it's like
to the
more
words.
Than words. Like, show me how you feel. Oh. Da, 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 da. Like, it's not cool.
Well, I have to say, I'm like vomiting a little bit because I mean, thought about that when we got married. It was on the radio at the time.
It was such a
married.
Popular song of a certain
song.
Time. Yeah.
Obviously, we did not go with it. Thank God. Otherwise,
what did you go with instead?
Oh, we walked into our reception to "We Are in Love" by Harry Connick Jr.
Oh, that's
see,
yeah.
That's
yeah.
Good.
See, yeah.
Yeah.
We did
classic.
We you went classic.
We did. I Can See Clearly Now.
Well, that's right. I love that song.
Yeah, it's cute.
Yeah.
Yeah. For my ill-fated marriage, but yes, it was cute. That's
whatever. I mean, it's undeniable that you made a good choice.
Oh. Troy never listens, so that's my ex-husband. Hi, Troy. We love you. My son loves Dina. He's in love with Dina.
I know. He's the aww. Best. He's so sweet.
The funniest thing he's ever said to me about Dina is, I want to go where she goes because she always has snacks.
Yeah. I mean, that is fair. Look.
That's true. I'm not
it
leaving.
It proves to
snacks.
Be true. We have snacks here. We have chips. We have Halloween candy. It's
yay, Halloween.
September. We have Halloween candy. You know.
Sorry you're not here, kid.
Falls around the corner. Yeah. Sorry, buddy. You wrote a new book.
I did.
Your first book did very well.
Yes.
Also great. Great book. What was that 2011?
It was like two. It was like 2010. And
yeah,
then,
2010.
And
right.
Then I got like
and then,
a
yes.
rebirth in 2012.
Right. Right. Yeah. Because of publishing stuff.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I remember
it
this.
Got republished by Penguin in 2012.
Because right. You read at Real Vancouver Writer Series way back then.
Way back then.
Yeah, yeah. I remember this.
In 2010?
In
2011.
2010,
no, it was 2011, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I think, or maybe it was even 2012. It was after a bunch of other stuff had happened with the book.
Yes.
Anyway.
It's all a blur now.
It's all a blur. But I just remember that was such a good reading. Like, I remember so clearly, yeah. And also, you just, like, waltzed in all beautiful.
Oh.
Your hair was, like, long and gorgeous. And I was like, yes, this is great.
It's the hair. It's always the hair. It's a process. You guys should see it, really. It's like a... I look like Hagrid from...
That's not a bad look.
Yeah, that's
it's
fine.
Seriously, I suppose it's in again. I think that like super teased hair, but that's what my hair really looks like without assistance.
I definitely do want to see more of that.
Yeah.
You should do some before and after shots.
Next time.
Just in general. Like, that could be your own art project. Jen has her Cindy Sherman project.
I may send you a picture.
Please do.
You can't tweet it.
No, I won't. I won't share it with anyone.
Are you sure? It would be kind of fun. No, your hair is beautiful. We only have people on this podcast whose hair or socks or something we really like.
That's good. Okay. Yeah.
Everyone does have style that comes on the podcast in some respect.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think we know it, which, even though no one can see us, that you're judging us. So.
Yeah, everyone is all the time.
We judge everybody.
If we weren't in an era where you can basically look at what someone looks like instantaneously, these people would be very curious and they would want to know. Yeah. They'd be like, does that person sound like they have a deviated septum? I don't know.
I want you guys all to know her gender has beautiful hair.
Yeah.
And that's what she sounds like too.
Yep.
Also, the book is beautiful though.
The book is beautiful.
Are you happy with the cover?
I'm really happy with the cover.
I love it.
Yeah. I'm super happy.
This is like a for sure good dress like a book moment. Is also, like these good flowers.
Magnolias.
They're magnolias.
Magnolia blooms.
Oh. White magnolias.
I love magnolias.
Yeah, they're amazing.
Yeah.
They grow super well here.
I don't have any, but.
I don't either, but I feel like when it's magnolia season, you go outside and they're just like exploding everywhere.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. Good book. Good book cover.
Good book. Good book cover. Yeah. Well, I guess we covered it all.
Exactly.
Okay, bye, everybody. We covered poop in windows.
Yep.
And we're good.
I'm getting my notes.
Yeah.
Judge a person by how they look and a book by its cover. All good.
So, you know, I was curious about that whole process with your first novel because it was a funny journey, no?
Yes.
It was, right?
It was, yeah.
How did that, like, change anything about the process for you writing this novel, though?
This novel was such a different process. Like, that first novel was like, I'm learning how to write. I'm at the writer's studio. I'd have never written anything before in my life. And everything was fantastic. I was naive and thought everything was fantastic and great. And every draft was, I was done.
You just had confidence.
I had confidence.
Can I interject and then we'll come back to this. But how did you come to the decision to go to the writer's studio?
Accidentally.
This is SFU Writer's Studio.
Yeah,
SFU. Yeah, just where Jen teaches. Yeah.
I was just reading the Georgia Strait and I saw an ad for it and I thought, oh, hey, well, I'm writing right now. I'm really enjoying it. Maybe I'll apply. And if I get in, it's a sign that I'm meant to do this. And so I looked up what the criteria was and how many pages you had to submit. Of course, I didn't even have that many pages of anything worthy. So I quickly wrote a bunch of stuff and submitted it. And the rest is history. So I wrote there with Wade Compton. Yay. And that was great.
Wade, former guest, friend of the podcast.
Also my boss. I love you,
Wade. Also your boss, yeah.
He's just the best.
Cool dude.
Yeah. And so I wrote a lot through that process and then the years after as well. But this book was different. I had no confidence with it. It was a hard book to write. I took a long break from it for about 3 years. I didn't write anything. And then when I came back, even when I finished it, I thought it was probably junk. And I remember sitting across the table at a restaurant with my agent, just waiting for him to tell me that it was complete garbage. And so we had a nice dinner, we had coffee, we had dessert, and I'm thinking, oh, he's just buttering me up with like really good food, just to make me feel really relaxed and tell me it's terrible. And so I was really surprised when he didn't say it was terrible. That he, you know, wasn't.
Because it's not terrible.
Yeah,
it's
lovely. You know, and he gave me some good feedback. But until then, I had no sense of what it was, whether it even made sense.
Do you think that some of that too just had to do with like, were you doing most of this writing on your own? You weren't necessarily and you weren't sharing it with people.
No, nobody.
I feel like that sometimes is what happens. We get super insulated with our work, and if we don't, not that you know, we don't develop skills as people. As writers to do revisions or to make changes or to realize that something is wrong. But sometimes if you don't have those outside eyes, you're like, well, this is a garbage heap.
I think that's really true because I was completely on my own. I had just through a series of life events, I had just kind of stopped being involved in any literary scene. Life was busy, couldn't get into Vancouver and out again. And so I wasn't even keeping in touch with people very well. And I wasn't sharing my work in any way, in any readings or getting any insights, other than going to Sage Hill for a few weeks.
Oh, you did go to Sage Hill.
And then things did turn around for me, you know, getting that sense of community and being around other writers. But yeah, I think you're totally right.
I know there's
just in my head.
there are some writers that really thrive on complete mm-hmm. solitude. And I personally am just not one of those people. But, like, I get it. But, I feel like if I was doing exactly what you were doing, I would be totally living in fear that I was writing something terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do think, like, community or being around other writers is really important. Not always, not all the time, mm-hmm. but certainly at select points. Because you never want to feel like you're all alone. Nobody ever wants to feel that.
Yeah.
Even if you're not seeing people in person, you know? So I'm glad you went to City Chill and it all turned around.
It did.
You didn't get ticks. So, I mean, that's really good.
Oh, my God.
Or did you get ticks?
No, I was, yes, but I was terrified.
I feel like everyone that goes to City Chill says, I'm super scared I didn't get ticks.
Is that how you get Lyme disease?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, and then you're going to be like, what's her face? Yolanda Hadid?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, she has Lyme disease.
I thought you were going to say, like, Kathleen Hanna, who also has Lyme disease. Mm-hmm. There's a beautiful documentary about her and this whole thing on Netflix. You should watch it. It's good.
So anyway, so was everyone afraid of the ticks?
Well, a lot of people were from their prairies, so they
were cool.
They had their tick game on. They understood how to remove the tick, and they explained it to me very well. But I was just paranoid. You know, you'd go out for a walk. I would stay in the middle of the road, not getting too close to the fields, and if a car came by, I'd panic because I'd have to get close to the tall grass. Or
I know how to remove ticks, just for anybody listening and for you right mm-hmm. now. If I am with you in the woods, I can remove a tick.
Yeah.
What's good. The tick? What's your technique?
Yeah, what's the tick?
Well, as long as there's a piece of it protruding, you squeeze it out.
This is what happened to
me
as a child.
But you can't squeeze it so that the...
No, it can't break.
Exactly.
Yeah, you have to keep it intact.
Yeah. I'm very good at it. I've removed several ticks in my lifetime.
I had one in my head as a child. Because I grew up in... close to the woods.
See?
Yeah, look at me now.
Exactly.
Look at me now. I've got a tick in my brain.
That's why your hair is so lovely.
That's why my hair is lush. That's why I'm so loud and boisterous.
That tick is like fucking
around in there. Yeah. Yeah. But my mom got it out. But it was,
But picture it, right? So every time you go outside, you got to come in, you go back to your room, you got to do a tick check. Right?
Yeah.
And I had a really bad basement room. It was like your church basement, ugly green carpet, avocado toilet. Like, it was just nasty. So there was nothing to distract me from my writing.
The avocado toilet's really winning me over.
So there you are. You got to full strip down. You got to do full strip down, a full mirror check in this really hideous bathroom with this terrible fluorescent light.
That makes you look like you're 1,000 years old.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Everything is sagging, drooping, and wrinkling. And you're just looking for a tick.
And you're like, this is how they reduce us.
Exactly.
So that we'll write.
Exactly. So I won't go out. I will just sit on the couch and write. So I do not have to be assaulted by my image looking for ticks.
Yeah. That's honestly...
fair.
That's fair. And that's like a real stress.
Ticks? Bugs?
Ticks are looking at yourself like that. Either.
All of it. And then also then you have to go write and do like this other weird vulnerable task. You're like, whatever. It's all fine. I just looked at myself naked in the mirror to make sure I wasn't going to get Lyme disease for 20 minutes. I could definitely write a couple paragraphs.
I recently found like an empty, dried up spider egg sack in my house, but I didn't know where the spiders had gone.
I
don't know where they went. I don't know where they went. Did they hatch? Did they all die? Who knows? And then a week later, I'm in the shower and I look up at the ceiling in my shower and there were all these baby spiders on the ceiling. So I'm naked in the shower trying to kill them with my hands, but I'm not tall enough. So I'm just swatting at air. It was great.
You're so brave. I would have jumped out of that shower.
That is brave.
I'm actually not scared of spiders.
I'm not scared of them either, but like I feel like...
But the nakedness as
it's
another element
right?
of vulnerability.
That's a nightmare. That's arachnophobia is what that is.
Yeah.
That is. It's very similar.
Yeah.
Arachnophobia too, if that doesn't already exist.
But right now I really want to go see It.
I just saw it on Friday.
And are you frightened?
No, but the best thing about the movie is that if you go on a night where the theater is full, people yell at the movie. Because it's a horror movie, right? It's got all those horror films.
So people
tropes.
Are screaming.
Yeah. So like when the kid opens the door to the basement, somebody yells, "Don't open the door!"
That's awesome.
And there's one scene where a kid's like trapped in a room and he turns on the light switch and it's just a room stuffed with clown dolls, like freaky clown dolls. And I remember one guy sobbing, "Not the clowns."
This is amazing.
Yeah.
That's fun.
It's like performance art.
Yeah.
That was the best part. And people were like, "Don't go in the basement."
Can I ask a question about the movie?
Yeah, you can ask me anything.
Is there a preteen orgy in the film?
No.
Okay. Because
is there one in the book?
Yes.
Oh.
Between whom?
I have never read the book, but I looked this up years ago because someone had mentioned it. So apparently at the first, like when they're kids, after they kill the Jafeet, the It, in the first part of the narrative before they become adults, they've all been so traumatized that the girl character's like, the only way for us all to get through this is for me to fuck all of you.
No way.
Yes, look this up. This is 100% true. It's,
are you joking?
No, 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 no. This is for real.
Stephen King.
Do you want me to pull up Wikipedia or like some other? I can probably find the pages. Apparently, it's also multiple pages.
Are you joking?
No, this is a real thing.
Oh, I gotta go look that up.
So, heads up, everyone. This is your hot literary info for the day.
No.
When I say hot, I mean super disturbing.
I mean, it'd be super creepy if she had sex with the it.
Yeah, like that would be yeah, off. That would be really bad. Or if they had to, they sacrificed her to the it. You're like, you have to go sleep with the it now. Bye.
No, wait. So she has sex with all those boys?
Correct.
There's like six of them.
Yeah, it's a real situation.
Okay, but
that didn't happen in the movie. I guess.
It didn't happen in the miniseries either.
She's sexually abused by her father. So Stephen King is doubling down on her sexual trauma.
Yeah.
Like, what's he doing?
Yeah.
Stephen King
in the film, in the book, apparently. It is her idea. She's like, this is the only way for us to be connected.
Well, she wants
and like to repair. Yeah, so her vulva repairs the friendship.
Well, let's be honest. My vulva repairs friendship.
I'm sure it does. I'm sure it does. But also, like, I'm sure there's lots of men that also think this is true. It's like, yeah, if we just all, like, get in that vulva, we're going to be so tight again.
Are you? What?
We're going to be best buds. All our... Everything will be fine. Anyway, sorry about that interjection,
it's
but
okay. I feel really gross now.
Yeah. And this has actually, I think, been brought up a few times in like articles and things written about the new film.
Huh.
That like there's this weird thing that has consistently been ignored.
In the film, they cut their hands and do like a blood brothers type of
thing. That makes more sense.
Which, I mean, they're 13.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, it's not like. You know, I mean, you have teenage boys.
Yes, I do.
At 13, they're not immediately going to think her vulva is going to heal us all.
No.
They're more likely to do the blood.
It's her idea. Like, she's doing a lot of emotional and physical labor in the book, apparently.
Yeah.
And her body is.
Well, I mean, that's the thing about Stephen King, though, is that whenever he has preteen girls or teen girls in any of his films or any of the books, there's always a menstruation bloodbath.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And there's one in it also,
mm-hmm.
which I was like, okay, cool. But how many times are you going to use this trope, Stephen King? There's more to girls.
Also, like, there's also scarier things than periods.
Yeah, they're not
like a lot of things that are more upsetting. It's also more scary as a young girl to get your period than it is to like for someone else to see it. Like, they don't have to deal with it. They don't have cramps.
Yeah,
fuck them.
I'm very upset by this.
They're not like emotionally, hormonally messed up because they don't understand what's happening to their bodies.
I'm like genuinely upset.
Yeah, I mean, it's upsetting. Well, I'm glad I could share this with you.
Wow. Thank you.
Tone. Just kidding. Your book has nothing like this.
We're going to talk about preteen orgies.
Like, I don't know how we segue from that.
There's, talking about horror movies, I'm going to transition into like a supernatural element of your book. So that was like somewhat good, right?
Yeah.
That was somewhat good.
Yeah.
So was that there were supernatural elements to your book?
Yes.
Or like spiritual or other, I don't know how you kind of identify them. Yourself in the writing.
It's also interesting to see how people identify.
Yeah.
Them.
Like to me, I'm like, well, there's a ghost and then there's like some past life shit.
Yeah.
And I'm into both of them and feel great about it. But were those things that were always present in the narrative or did they come at a certain point where you kind of introduced them as a way to sort of illuminate sort of what the protagonist was experiencing?
The past life stuff was always there. So I knew that there was going to be this element. It was all because I saw a documentary. Arthur C. Clarke had made those documentary series in 1985 where he chronicles strange things. And so he did a series.
What's it called?
It's called Strange World, something like that.
We should watch that.
I know. Now I want to watch that, too.
And he has them on all different topics. So there was one on reincarnation where he goes and they interview all these children that believe they've been reincarnated and they take them back and they meet their old families and whatnot.
Whoa.
And so I remember thinking, that is crazy. Like, what if you knew, absolutely knew, that you were someone else and there was proof? And how would everybody else feel about that? Like, how would your new family feel? So I was just really intrigued about that. So that was always there. I knew I wanted to write about
and
that.
And that sort of also plays into this idea of, like, you know, it touches a little bit on, like, what mental health issues are and, like, how they're interpreted and how they're interpreted both culturally and, like, at the time period.
Yeah, and what we think is normal.
Yeah, and what we think is normal and, like, if we would... To me, I kept thinking, I was like, oh, if I was, you know, in this book, if I was one of these characters, would I rather just be like, well, I guess I would rather, like, that my... Would I rather my son was schizophrenic or that he believed he lived a past life? Like, which is the better option, you know? And I feel like you're kind of playing with ideas of that, like... what you want as a parent too.
Totally.
For your child.
I love hearing what readers think already, whether they think that he was sick or whether what they want to believe.
100% I want to believe
so
in the
curious.
Past life situation.
Even like with the ghost, I have some people saying, well, it was a ghost, and other people saying, no, it was a subconscious conjuring of her imagination. And,
but also I think there's
are right.
Exactly. Yeah. Like there's a way for us to, as readers, interpret that and have both of those things be true because they're like true for the character or they're true for the narrative.
Yeah.
Like it doesn't have to be, you know, clear cut.
When I was reading it, it really, for me, was like a function of the narrative because there's so much in the novel about memory and the movement of people, like people moving, like migration. So the idea of somebody, a child, believing that he's somebody who has died in a past life, but also a past country, like this is not, is a really like interesting connection between places of origin and where people end up living. And it was something that occurred to me because, you know, I think like in my family growing up, my grandparents never talked about their immigration process. It was as if it was too painful for them and they wanted to excise it from our lives. And then what ended up happening, not everyone knows this. Hey, this is big news. I see dead people and they're usually my grandparents and they come to me in the middle of the night. And I often think this is what I get for not knowing their stories. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
so
totally.
When I was reading this book, I kept seeing that sort of connection.
Yeah.
Right.
And it is. It's so much about origin that your origin story is much more than you think. It's not really just you were born and these are your parents, but all the things that happened to them. And I too like think that the ghostly connection, I think most people experience something. So whether they want to assign it to wishful thinking or I had a dream or it was a coincidence, things happen. And, you know, I think that I don't necessarily think I see dead people, but I think that I experience strange things, and I'm quite willing to assign them to something else other than my rational mind.
Yeah, I also saw it as this way of like, you know, people being open to things outside of what they're immediately experiencing. Do you know what I mean? Like, and I think that, like, yeah, when you're talking about people experiencing something, you're talking about maybe people being like, oh, fuck. Gen Z's dead people. That's really messed up. But also to just be open to things, that are outside the realm of what you normally experience.
Sure, and accepting that.
And what that actually might signify to you, like that there might be meaning in that.
Well, there are whole cultures that really believe that you should have a relationship with the dead and that you should honor your dead and have them in your household, right? Keep them present, keep their memory present and honor them in daily ways. And there are whole religions that believe very much in reincarnation. So I find it really interesting when people refer to it as, this book has magical realism or something other than just allowing it to be what it is.
Yeah. I felt like it was too grounded for me to have magical realism be a part of it. Which, and nothing against magic. And there's so many novels that do have grounding elements, but there was something in this that really kept it more in the real world as we experience it for the most part.
So this concept that I talked about once with my therapist, big ups, hey, and where she talks about generational trauma, where this happens particularly, she uses an example of the Holocaust, right? Where we can experience, so for example, all this neo-Nazi stuff, we can experience you know, sort of PTSD symptoms, which are not ours personally, but our grandparents. So when I was reading this novel, I kept thinking about that concept of generational trauma, which is keeps it away from magic realism, I think, in a sense. It feels very real to me.
Yeah, and I liked that. I liked that thread too. That what is passed down, you know. So what is memory and other people's memories versus what do you have that is an internal memory that you just a knowing. You know, just the way animals know things.
Yeah.
That they did not experience. We must too know things.
And also I think there's something to be said for like having those memories, whatever they are, but then also, you know, discovering things, which also is something that happens in the novel. And something that I think we do all the time. Like, I know there's parts of my family history where I don't know little things, but like we make assumptions and we, you know, find little pieces of it here and there. But yeah, like, I don't know. It's just weird.
Well, and it's like, if you don't take the time and find out the stories, then you have to accept that you too will be forgotten.
Yeah, for sure. And also too, like, and something that happens in the book as well, like, kind of what I was just talking about, but like some people don't want to talk about it or bring it up. Mm-hmm. Like they're, you talked about ideas of memory or ideas of forgetting, and like the idea of forgetting to sort of shut down parts of what we've experienced in order to save ourselves or in order to potentially save future generations. Even though I think, as we talked about with, you know, intergenerational trauma, that's still going to come up no matter what. So people are making these choices, even though there are some things that are happening that you can make choices about that like just will happen to you or have happened.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think there is no, like, for everyone who wants to just forget and shut it down and compartmentalize it, I get it. But I also know it will just keep coming back. It will revisit you in many ways throughout your life.
In different forms.
Yeah, in different forms. And other people, your family will pick up on it.
Yeah. And there are other, I mean, obviously we all have coping mechanisms or ways that we can get through life experience that is, you know, on a scale from like moderately unpleasant to horrific.
Yeah.
So not to say that we obviously all don't do that, but
yeah. And I think there's ways of dealing with things that aren't public. I think a lot of people that don't want to talk about their lives, just they want it to remain private. So there are lots of ways to work through things.
Oh, for sure.
Private, right?
Yeah.
Therapy, all those kinds of things.
Yeah.
You don't need to write a book about it.
No.
Yeah, you do.
But I mean, you can. I'm going to read it. And then I'm going to invite you on my podcast.
Do you know what made me laugh hard in this book? Which is, you know, it's a serious book, right? Yeah. But there's a scene where Simran is answering a postpartum depression questionnaire.
Oh, it's so funny.
As she's just answering and she feels good because she knows she's answering the right answer.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's the funniest thing I've read in a long time. Because, I mean, you must have, you have children. I've had this experience where the public health nurse is asking me these questions. And I'm like, well, I don't want to alarm anybody. So I'm just going to say it's great. My nipples feel great.
Exactly. You want to win. You want to win the mothering, like, check.
And, the competition.
You want everyone to know that you're okay and you're natural at it. And there's no reason to be alarmed. Whereas I haven't met someone who becomes a mother and says, oh, it was just easy. Like, I think most mothers say, why didn't anyone tell me the horror that was awaiting me and my body?
And yes, and the conclusion of that scene, she has sex with her husband.
Yeah.
And there's this wonderful description where she says her body's like a pinball machine.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, because anyone who's ever had a child, and it's true, sort of the end of your pregnancy, you're not having sex with your husband because don't touch me. Look what you've done to me, you monster. And then you don't have sex after the child's born because you can't. And then the first time you do it, it's like that. You're just kind of like, okay, well,
find somewhere.
Yeah, just and
do your thing.
Can I sleep afterwards? And please don't touch my boobs. They are feed bags, not fun bags anymore.
Exactly.
Yeah, it made me a little, but I laughed too because it was like a pinball machine.
I actually think overall the book has a lot of dark humor. Mm-hmm. Like, I think you are good at picking up on those little moments. And like I've written more lightheartedly. And I think there's, you know, this book isn't necessarily doing those things, but there, I don't know, that's another good example. But I feel like in some of the, like, the sibling interactions as well, and the conversations with the mother as well, like, they're really pointed, they're sharp, there's levels of sarcasm at play. Like, even though the material is very, very dark, like, this book has everything, as we discussed, past life, ghosts,
a really annoying younger sister.
Yeah.
Sibling. Very funny, though.
Yeah. Oh, super funny. Like, all of that stuff is so funny.
She's like so many women, right? Like, you're just like, oh, if she was my sister, I'd break her sunglasses.
She's like super soccer mom.
Super soccer mom, yeah. But, like, you've found a way through all of these dark things. Death, you know, families literally being separated for a number of different reasons. But in all of those things, there's always, like, I think it's because the female characters in the book are really strong. Mm-hmm. And so they're like, you've allowed them to be these, like, have these kind of biting moments where they're allowed to take control, and a lot of it is through these humorous
and I never thought it
one-liners
was funny.
Or anything.
I never thought there was anything funny about it until I went back and reread it after it was finished, and I realized, even just the leafleting flowers on funeral flowers.
I laughed out loud when I was reading that part.
Kind of like awful and really funny. Mm-hmm.
That to me felt like something from a very contemporary sitcom on FX where someone is in this moment doing this thing that to them is really meaningful or whatever. And then someone tries to ruin it and they're like, you're not ruining this for me. Yeah.
Yeah. Seemed to me like a scene from I don't know, a Paul Thomas Anderson.
Yeah, movie totally. Yeah. That too. Yeah. Anyway, I really feel like, I think it was a good choice, even though you didn't necessarily realize as you were going along, to have those moments. You probably, as a writer, knew that you needed them. Mm-hmm. You needed these moments.
Yeah.
It made her such a more dynamic character.
Well, you know, there were moments where, because she's stuck in her grief.
Yeah.
So much grief. And there were moments where we saw different things from her, like when she has her affair with Charles, which, by the way, I really enjoyed him. We don't see him for very much.
No.
But I liked his, you did a lot with his really only one scene. Right?
But don't you feel like that also plays into the idea of the affair too?
We all love writing infidelity scenes, let's be honest.
Everyone wants to do it.
It's all good.
Everyone wants to do it. But the scene is short and it's like this beautiful slice of her experience that was her own and that was exciting. But that also, I think, is why it was short and so effective.
Is he a doctor?
He is a doctor.
Okay, because I have a hot cop in my book, so this one can be hot doc.
Hot doc.
Halloween costumes, yes. Literary hot characters.
Well, your doc is shirtless sitting in an armchair, so that was, that's pretty great.
I have a story in my collection about how to have an affair, and there's just like a loserish mailman in it, so.
Ooh.
You guys have hot people. I'm just like, whatevs.
So you're like, you just take what comes to the door. Package for you, literally.
Yeah.
You know what? That's really the most efficient thing to do.
Whatever.
Keep your expectations low.
Yeah. That's definitely one of my mottos.
That's fair rule number one.
Lower your expectations.
That's awesome.
But yes, that was a great scene.
Yeah, it was good.
Charles was great. But yeah, it's this little flash of her being exuberant.
Yeah.
And then the rest of the time she's like, fuck. Like that's under her breath the whole book.
Yeah. And I think it makes I hated her for having the affair, and I hated so much about her as a character. Like there was just so much that get over it and move on. And I realized that reaction that I was having about her was the reaction we have about a lot of people who are struggling with something. Mm-hmm. Like it's exhausting being their friend, and it's exhausting supporting them. And yet we have to.
And yet also it's the type of thing that if you were in it and you're doing it, you're the same person.
Exactly.
And you don't realize that A, other people hate you, or that you might hate yourself until you have a revelatory moment. Yeah. And you're like, oh, great. I was the one doing that. Super.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, she's really, I think we see a lot of that when she's in her therapy sessions too.
Oh, for sure.
Like she's playing the therapist, which I thoroughly enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
Good for you, Tammy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, because after you go to so many therapy sessions, you really do feel qualified to run the therapy session.
Yeah, sometimes. It's almost like a writing workshop.
Totally.
After a while, you're like, I already know what I can self-edit.
I can self-coach. I can self-therapy.
You guys also both wrote super reasonable partners in your novels, in The Conjoined.
Oh.
And here, you both have the female protagonist is like, ugh, I'm tired of this nice person.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you mean Trevor?
Because of my own, stuff. The normality of this is exhausting to me.
You know, that's, I think, an emotion that we don't allow women to express very often.
Yeah, for sure.
I think that men, and this is something that I railed against when I was writing this book, and then, when my marriage fell apart, is that we very rarely allow women to ruin their relationships for no good reason.
Mm-hmm.
But men do it all the time. So I, that was part of the reason I wrote that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Right? It was a perfectly fine relationship. It was just, she just got
bored, wanted something else.
Yeah. 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 And I felt that about Simran too. When she's looking at her husband, she's like, ugh, he's watching porn.
Yeah. I mean, it's a real good vanilla life. And I think it's hard to be with someone who's so good or who doesn't really, other than him watching porn, There was nothing bad he did.
No.
And
he was good.
She felt so bad that she... You can't be with someone good then because you just hate yourself so
much. Yeah, she had to be messy.
Yeah.
She needed to be messy in order to, like, move forward in some way.
Yeah.
Whatever happened.
I feel like everyone at this table really relates to that.
Yeah, for sure.
We're not nice people.
That's why we're all here.
Yeah, like, and that's the other thing, too. Like, you talk about not liking, you know, Simran, but, like, we all, none of us are perfect. Like, we talk about disliking the good male character, and we're just like, yeah, it's because no one is perfect. Like, we're making little mistakes all the time and hoping that they're not bad enough that people eventually will forgive us for whatever we've done or accept us for our fuckery.
Well, even as a writer, I kept trying to think about, even though I don't write his backstory at all and I don't give him too much space in the book, I kept thinking, he can't be this good. Something must be wrong with him. Like, what's going on in his life? Because even I couldn't accept his goodness.
I also loved the moment when he's meeting her parents.
Mm.
And it was also funny when there, it's almost like in a cartoon where someone's like gulping audibly when he's talking about his first marriage and it's just like, bah, bah, bah. Like, it's,
yeah. There was a first marriage. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a bad thing he did.
Totally. It's this, yeah, exactly. Like, to them, to the characters he's relating to in that scene, it's like, what did you do?
He has soiled goods.
Yeah. Yeah.
He has soiled goods. I have this image of a dirty diaper now in my head. Poor Raj. Poor Raj.
Poor Raj.
If you were real, I'd take you out for a drink.
Hey, you know what? He hired himself that housekeeper, he did the right thing.
I know, he's a good guy.
That was the right choice.
He got the good Chinese takeout.
He did get the good Chinese takeout.
Yeah. He's a good man.
He is.
Yeah.
It's hard to see ourselves with people that are doing the right thing when we feel badly.
Well,
what we're doing.
It's like we can't assign blame, right?
No.
And that's what we want to do
when
we're sad or upset.
Yeah.
We want to assign blame to our husband or the people that we're in relationships with to say it's their fault. And Simran really can't do that.
No.
He's a good man.
And I feel like sometimes...
Which makes her bad.
Totally. And sometimes the only thing you can do in those moments is be like, well, this person's not saving me or making me better. So, like, this is the only thing I can be angry about.
Yeah.
That, like, they're not forcing me to make better life choices.
Totally.
Which is obviously completely absurd. But I think that's kind of the dark hole that we shove ourselves into.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway. Yeah,
you know, just to change topic a little bit. I read this interview with you. I don't know how old it was. Talking about, you know, people kind of expect you to be writing about cultural identity.
Mm-hmm.
And you said, I write about identity, right?
Yeah.
So my question to you is, and I ask this of authors all the time, how do you feel about the weight of representing a community? Because I feel like, for me anyway, I'm expected to do that all the time. So how do you feel about it? What do you think?
I don't think it's good.
Okay.
I don't think it's fair to the community.
No.
Like, one story cannot be representative of a whole cultural experience, right? And I remember explaining that to someone who said, you know, the first book, you portray the community in a poor light.
What does that mean?
Well, that, you know, that there was an abusive husband, there was, you know, a bad marriage.
That's just humanity.
Right? But that's just one story, right?
But that's just life.
That's just life. Yeah. But that's just one story, right? So until there's more writers writing about various things, I know I'll always be called on to be some kind of representative. But I'm careful that I can't be that, right? That I can't present myself that way. If other people want to offer that to me and, you know, I say something, that's fine. But there needs to be space for other people. So...
Yeah, I think, you know, all the authors writers I talk to about that have varying levels of comfort with this. Some people really lean into it and they think, okay, well then I'm going to say this because that's what I have to say about this, you know, representation question. And some people really shy away from it. Like, I think Allie Blythe was saying that he really shies away from representing, you know, trans issues or, you know, all that stuff. And there are some people, like, I think Kai is much more comfortable.
Yeah, when we talked to Kai Chang on the podcast,
it was
same episode. And it was like two complete, which makes complete sense to me. Like, the idea that, you know, go back 100 years ago and it, you know, when publishing, all whatever it is that we're talking about was way less representational. It was the same thing with women's stories. It'd be like, well, this one woman wrote a book, so like, yeah, clearly all women are like this. It's cool. They're only 50% of the pop. NBD. And of course, it's not true about any particular culture. It's not true about any particular identity at all. I've talked about this with Daniel a lot, but like, to me, true representation is only when there's full diversity of all quality of work. So like, until enough people are allowed to also make shitty books and just get away with it, like publishing, yes, is just like, yes, this is cool, then we're not there. Because right now the same people are still writing the shitty books and the good books. But like, if you are writing a book, or you, or you know, Krajinda or Jen are writing a book, it's held up to a higher standard of like what this means for representation, what it means for representation in publishing, which is so exhausting. Like, it's completely unfair for that to be the marker of what we're, you know, looking at. It's like, or, you know, we published one of these guys, so we're cool for a bit, which is also not true. Like, none of that stuff is true or should be true or should be what we accept as, you know.
But it happens all the time.
It happens all the time.
I remember having an agent in the U.S. saying, oh, well, I already have an Indian writer. Indian writers were hot last year, as if like culture and was some kind of commodity.
Yes.
As opposed to it being a book.
As opposed to the craft, the narrative, all the work that you put into all of these other elements that, again, other people are doing. Like, how many fucking stories do I have to read from like sad white guys in Brooklyn? We have lots.
Yeah.
Like, when we talk about, am I wrong?
They're all named Jonathan.
They're all named Jonathan, and they'll hang out. Yeah. Yeah. But I don't know. I continually find it frustrating. I also like, you know, work in different areas of the book industry, and I work in a bookstore. And so I'm always like, ugh, I can't put these on display again. I don't care.
But I think, like, to ask one person to be a representative,
you can't.
It's lazy.
It's extremely lazy. And it also,
like, go meet people, go talk to people.
Yeah. And it's going to push whoever you put into that position for like the hot trend seat. They're going to be tired, and then people are going to get tired of them. They're going to be like, oh, I had to hear from the same person over and over again. Like, it's frustrating.
Yeah.
I've heard that's a very familiar story. That has happened to me over and over again, right? Like, we already have an Asian Canadian female writer, or an Asian writer who's a woman. And I'm like, really? Because there's literally like millions of us. So I think we all have something different to say.
Yeah. Like, how many, you know,
but I remember even speaking with another writer, who was writing, and she had a lot of drama in her work, and I have a lot of drama in my work, and, you know, getting feedback saying, well, there's just too much. It's too much drama. It's not believable. And she and I both laughed, like, well, it is believable. It's this other experience. Like, life is messy. It might not be the quiet Canadian on the prairies.
But also, you're not getting, you know, there's other people writing, like, certain types of genre fiction that don't get in trouble, for doing all sorts of things that are extremely dramatic. Like, no one's telling George R. R. Martin to be less dramatic. They're not like, listen, we need less highborn incest. Can you please tone it down? Like, it happens all the time where things that are considered, like, either highbrow or that are part of, like, some genre.
There's like some subversive like racism in there. Like, when I hear things like, oh, well, that's too much of a Bollywood ending. Like, well, what are you saying there?
No, I heard you say that, it sounded very racist to me.
Yeah.
Because of the perception of what they think, you know, Indian culture
is,
you know, with, I don't know, with high drama.
Yeah.
Bollywood movies or, you know, whatever else.
In fact, are we going to have a singing part in this?
We can at any point.
Because costume change singing?
No. I did already sing a little bit, and I do like to sing all the time.
Can we rap?
Let's just rap.
We can totally rap. Yeah. But I think that also forces people sometimes to not look at those parts of their culture. Like, we write about pop culture all the time, if it's North American or whatever. But like, Bollywood culture is extremely important. So like, why does that have to be considered, you know, it shouldn't be considered a negative. It should just be considered another part of the conversation around the book, if that is part of what
it
is.
Like, I just had this conversation yesterday with Chelsea Rooney, former guest, friend of the podcast. About how different cultures have different ways of communicating, just in general, just like in the house, mm-hmm. their conversations sound different, and how that trickles into literature and art that those people from those cultures will be creating. And I said, you know, that cultures who have a really vocal and like conversational culture, like, you know, and I often think about, you know, Jewish families, how there's so much dialogue and conversation around the dinner table, and which translates into lots of film and lots of books and lots of chatty things like that.
That's true.
And I said, you know, Chinese Canadians, we don't sit around talking about our feelings. Mm. Dinner table is silent, and then your father yells at you to do your homework, and that's the end of the day. So sort of the cultural output is going to look different. So if somebody's saying to you, the book has too much drama, what are they saying? What are they judging about the things that they think your culture is about?
Well, the lens that they're looking through.
Like my people are allowed to be super loud and make a million movies about shooting people, and it's fine.
Yes.
Like all the time. It's literally constant.
While eating red sauce.
They have so much red sauce. The red sauce and blood together. I'm sure there's been like 7 million essays about that. But like, you're being too dramatic. Okay? So. Well, coming off drama, I feel like, are we ready to talk about our feelings?
Yeah.
Okay. And if you want afterwards, if you have like either some anger or just some emotions you want to get out, that's totally up to you. Okay. So I'm going to get mad. Oh, I had to read it off my phone because I didn't print it out because I just got home.
Read your phone and I'm going to set up a timer for
okay,
you.
Okay, great.
It's a control rant.
It's, we try.
Yeah, so this is Dina's Rage Minute. It's coming at you.
Okay, you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Okay, go.
People who are offended by other people who are childless by choice, like, it's cool and in no way offensive or an insult to you or your life choices. I guess what I really want to say is, like, you could just enjoy fighting with less people for kindergarten or whatever. Like, you don't need to be pissed off at these people. Just layers, like, when I mean clothing. And I just really don't look forward to wearing them. Like, summer's been great. When I think about layers, I feel super mad. I feel like also forest fires are still burning. You could maybe get set on fire and you'd have to, like, unwrap yourself. It seems dangerous. It's gross. It's disgusting. Abusive men. Just, are we literally still not done with this? Like, manipulative men, and also people forgiving them without consequence. Just like, sexual coercion is not flirting. And I'll tell you what flirting is, because it's one of my best skills. So please come find me, assholes, and I will teach you.
Stop.
Oh, okay. Great. So that was,
sexual coercion's disgusting.
It's completely unacceptable. Man. I'm tired of it. I'm tired of this, all this shit.
I'm tired of it.
It's too much. Why is that still a thing?
Because they're dick bags. It
is.
We should totally leave this in the podcast. Just us saying dick bags. For
dick
like
bag.
2 minutes.
Dick bag. Dick bag. Dick bag.
Make a rap with that.
Yeah, we could. Oh my God. That actually would be a good, like,
oh, just the song is called Dick Bag.
The song is called Dick Bag.
And the bridge is just Dick Bag, Dick Bag, Dick Bag.
Yeah. The first line is
fucktard in there. It's my new favorite word.
The first line of the song is just sexual coercion. Because I feel like lots of things rhyme with coercion, but also sexual is often used in rap. So you're like
sexual
subverting it.
Such a perversion.
Yeah.
I don't know. You could,
yeah.
I don't
like know. It's, I feel like you could keep going in that.
That's a terrible rhyme. I should stop.
Nope. It's too late though. It's happened for you.
Okay. It's been recorded.
But yeah, I don't know. I just feel like lately there has been also like just more people being like weirdly upset about, not necessarily me, but sometimes me, like people not having children. It's like, why do you even care?
Why are they upset about people not having
children? Like, I don't know why this is a thing that people want to care about.
I think it's great.
The
world has too many people.
Yeah, and like, it's not that I don't take care of other people, which I think is this mistake that you're like, I'm super kind to your child. I've taken care of my nieces, other people's kids. I have relationships with my friends and their children.
But
like,
you don't even have to do that.
No, I don't have to do that. But I think there's this assumption that you're like, and also it's fine. If you hate kids, that's also fine. Like, lots of people hate all sorts of things. Like, you're not killing them in the street or kicking them if you see them walking down the street. Like,
I have a problem with people who kick children.
Yeah, me too. That's what I mean. Like, those things are actually reasons to be upset. Yeah. Like, these are things that are unacceptable that we should not allow to happen in society. But I don't know. I don't know. I think it's partially because there have been a lot of things that have come out lately about, you know, like motherless women, blah, blah, blah. And so as soon as that becomes almost like a trend, people want to talk about it in the other direction. But yeah, like I'm, you know, it's not in the other direction. People aren't like, boy, shouldn't have that kid. He's a real burden. Like, you know what it's like to have a kid.
I do know.
Other people don't need to tell you.
No.
Yeah. Anyway,
they're just assuming it's my hot take. You're all dead inside. That's what they're assuming.
Yeah, I mean, I am. It's fine.
Well,
also,
I am also dead.
That's what I mean. Like, we're all, it doesn't matter. We're still dead inside. Whether we have given birth, adopted, or not, it doesn't matter. Like,
uplifting.
Yeah, you guys. Okay, Jen, are you ready?
Sure.
Okay, it's time for Jen's Emotion Corner.
Okay, so one of my oldest and dearest friends is really sick right now. And which is, I've known her for 22 years and she was, one of my like three main supports when my marriage was failing. And, she's been one of my first readers for all of my books and all of my poems. And, it's what's really forced me to, understand that she's 42, I'm 41. So it's forced me to understand that I don't have a lot of time to necessarily to do all the things that I want to do. And so I spent the last few days really leaning into not giving a fuck. And if I really want to tell you how I feel about you or the things that you're doing or how you've affected my life, I'm going to do it now. And so I'm sorry, everybody. Everybody who's listening now is going to be, oh no, Jen's emotions are going to come at me all the time. And that's what I'm going to do. Because honestly, I don't have time to keep it all inside and further deaden my insides. There you go. Jen's Emotion Corner is not going to be stuck in the corner anymore. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
When you see her, run the other way.
Yeah. You guys.
Some people are into it.
Some people are into it.
Yeah. It's fine. And if you're not, then just go stay away from me.
Yeah. Who cares? That's good. I mean, yeah, that's a lot to go through and to think about.
And to think about, yeah. Also, hold on to the love that you have, whatever it is.
Yeah. That's a great point.
Sorry, it sounds like a fortune cookie. It's terrible.
Wait, is this going to be your new project?
What, making fortune cookies?
You could like write poems and put them in fortune cookies.
I've had this idea for a while, making subversive fortune cookies.
Well, can get them custom made. It's not
fortune
super hard.
Fortune cookies, stereotyping.
She's the one who said it.
No, is it stereotyping? Maybe.
Are you reclaiming fortune cookies?
I'm going to reclaim fortune cookies.
I mean, if there was a fortune cookie here right now, I would eat it.
Well, I love them.
I know, me
like
too.
Fortune cookies. Everyone.
This does make me.
Cookie.
I haven't had like Chinese food in a long time. This is making me want it because your book had Chinese food in it. Now we're talking about fortune cookies. Like maybe that's tonight's plan. It's like coming to fruition.
That's what I'm gonna do. That's my new business. Fortune cookies. Hold on to the love that you have. Stay away from Jen's emotions. That's what's
gonna
be inside.
That's the name of the company.
Stay away from Jen's emotions.
Yeah. Like you can get. Two pack of Jen's Stay Away From Jen's Emotion fortune cookies for the special price right now, like a real deal.
Oh, that's good.
It is good.
Yeah.
People dying.
Sad.
People being sick. Yeah.
It's part of your book too. Death.
Yeah.
It sucks.
And you do jump around and talk about like, you know, while someone is sick, what's going on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It sucks.
It's awful.
Yeah. That's all you can say. It sucks.
It sucks. It sucks.
I think there's a whole line of greeting cards now for it. For to give people when their loved one is sick or dead. And some of them just say things like, it sucks.
Yeah.
I'll do your laundry.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. I agree.
So that's all you can do.
That is all you can do. You can just be helpful.
Yeah.
There's this, Hannibal Buress has this bit where he talks about thoughts and prayers. And he's like, talking about when people say they're praying for you. And he's like, I'm literally going through some tough shit. Like, come make me a sandwich. Like, I don't want your prayers. I want you to physically help me if I'm like going through. Yeah.
Well, and people say, well,
and it's
let
very
me know,
funny bit, but
whatever
yeah.
you need.
No,
just
you need
call
to
me. No,
no,
you just
specific.
Need to just do something.
Yeah.
Or you need to be like, are you going to be home at this time? I'm going to bring you five casseroles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or that five would be bottles great. Of wine or whatever.
All of that for sure.
Chocolate.
And it's helpful. It's not just grief. Like when someone is ill or you're caretaking for someone, like you got to have support around you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
For sure.
You
if
need...
anyone wants to bring me five casseroles, I'm in.
Great.
Yeah.
that's the only thing exciting about the weather getting cooler. I can turn my oven on again, and I can start making more lasagnas.
Yay.
It's too hot right now. I can't do it.
September meal planning, it's all stressing me out. Like, it's all like that. Oh, we have to eat things like that can't be made on the barbecue. That isn't just like lettuce.
All I do is eat. I swear to God, I only ate salad all summer because I was like,
seriously,
it's too hot.
It's too hot, right?
And I'm like, how can I make new salads? Great. What's this? Should I put chips in my salad? Maybe. I don't know. Who cares?
I had like a repertoire. I had it down. It was like chicken on the grill.
Or like picnic
foods. Five bean salad.
Yeah.
Maybe some quinoa.
Yeah.
See, that sounds really nice.
That does sound nice.
But now I feel like I need like to slow it down.
Yeah, you need to like put some roasted vegetables in the oven, whatever.
Yeah. That's what I, September.
Oy. I'm still in my transitional just eating like snack foods. So I'm like,
that's
like hummus bread, cheese, some olives. I don't need to, antipasto, whatever. Like, I don't want to.
I don't know why all people can't live that way.
It's the best, always.
Some people want real meals. And I'm like, okay, cool. But
again, in the winter, I do want like a cooked thing, but it has to be one dish that I put in the oven.
Yeah.
Like, is it a Big Mac and cheese? Great. Whatever is going on there. Is it, some kind of casserole situation? Cool. That's fine. But yeah, you're right. Transitional times are weird.
Yeah.
It's a weird time. Yeah. Do I have to wear layers? Do I have to cook things? What should I be doing with my life?
Exactly. Do I have to pack a lunch? Do I have to pack somebody else's lunch?
I have a real mental breakdown every time I have to consider in the fall, do I wear tights or no? Like tights or not?
I try every year to push it further.
To not?
Okay, to not wear them for as long as possible.
What does the temperature have to be before you put
it on? It has to be
10?
10? 10, 12?
Okay. So like... Okay, yeah, that's fair.
That's how I feel. Yeah. I agree. I'm in agreement.
I mean, I love tights. I mean, just think. Things you don't have to do, you don't have to shave your legs.
No, you don't have to.
Tights. They're slimming.
Yes, they are slimming.
Everything looks better with tights. Everything really does.
You can wear a shorter skirt with tights.
Totally. You can wear a shorter skirt.
Yeah.
I might get tights on my way home.
Oh. I love
them. I'm going to stock up.
Yeah.
I have quite a robust collection of tights.
You have great tights.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's good. Mm. But you got to get your basics. You have to get like a couple black pairs every year because they're the ones that go first. They always get busted. And now that they have the fleece line tights, that's the real.
There are fleece line tights.
Yes. It's the real joy of when it gets super cold.
Are they stretchy enough?
Yeah, they're stretchy. Yeah.
And they don't have the latex that shows through. You know how sometimes there's so much and it's like silver? It's gross.
No, they don't have that.
You might as well wear Spanx outside.
Yes.
Then.
It's not like that at all. No, the outside looks virtually the same. They're a tiny bit thicker than obviously regular tights, but it's like a thin layer on the inside.
Is
and
that
it's
gonna replace
so warm.
My gray cable knit tights?
Maybe.
I like those a lot.
I have wool tights too. I have like some merino wool tights and they're also very warm. But like last year was super cold.
Yeah.
So I felt like I needed these. I needed an advanced arsenal of like leg protection. Yeah. Look for the fleece line tights. I feel like they're becoming more popular. You'll find them everywhere now.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to look for those online. Then.
You can look for them online. Hugh does them. Yeah.
See, I'm opposite of you. I love the layering game of September.
Yeah. I just feel like I'm never ready. I feel like it's this transition.
Bring in the leather.
Yeah.
I'm ready.
I'm not ready for boots at all.
Oh, I'm so ready.
Oh, I'm ready for boots. I wore them here.
Yeah, I need to get new boots. And I feel like that's partially why, where I'm like, ugh, I don't like shopping for this.
The Bay boot sale. Just wait for it.
Yeah, I'm going to wait for it. That's a good point.
Yeah.
I'll just keep wearing my Doc Martens forever.
Well, that's fine.
Yeah.
Do that.
I mean, they're mostly good. Don't look good with everything.
They do go with everything.
They look good with shorter skirts, but I have a lot more like T-length stuff now, and sometimes it's too overwhelming.
I don't like them with the T-length.
No. I don't either.
Yeah. Need a bit of a...
It's fine. I'm still okay. We're still in a transitional time.
Yeah.
Where can people find you on the internet? You have a lovely website.
Thank you. GurjinderBazran.ca or on Facebook. Just search my name.
Okay.
You can't find me on Twitter.
You're not on Twitter.
No.
That's fine.
You can't find me on Instagram.
Are you on Snapchat?
No. I try to learn these things, but sadly, no.
Instagram, I feel like, has become my favorite now.
I feel like
I just see people's, like, I don't know, cute faces or, like, their kids or, like, pets. Yeah. Where sometimes Facebook, you're just like, no, why? But I'm still there.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going away.
Yeah.
I'm not on Facebook, honestly.
You're not.
I have very little knowledge of how
she's a tweeter.
You're a Twitter?
I'm on Twitter. And
she's
Instagram.
A real hardcore tweeter.
I tweet too much, probably.
Yeah. No, that's not true. But yes, follow Jen on Twitter. Her Twitter handle is
Jen's
her name.
Yeah.
Yep. She's great. I'm sure they'll be, yeah, go to Gregender's website because there'll be more events coming up.
Absolutely. Coming up. Writers of Festival. I'll be in Victoria, Whistler.
Yeah, there's going to be tons
of places.
You will have amazing opportunities to hear her read. Please buy her book. It is called Someone You Love Is Gone. It is really beautiful.
Very
and funny. As I mentioned, oddly funny.
Oddly funny.
Yeah. Yeah. Gregender gets the human experience.
Ghosts are funny.
Ghosts are funny. You can find us at cantlit.ca, Cantlit on Facebook, at Cantlit on Twitter, and you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts or whatever it's called now. Please rate us and review us. We love when you give us 5 stars, but you know what? We'll take 4.5.
Yes.
and we're on Stitcher. So, yeah. Please love and subscribe to our beautiful podcast. Okay. Gregender, we only have one question left for you.
Okay.
And that is, what can't you with?
Oh. It's September, so it's on my mind. I can't handle over-involved moms.
Oh.
Everybody I know is talking about the activities their kids are in, what their kids are doing, who
right.
their teachers are, all the stuff that's going on in their lives, their, you know, what fancy lunches they're making. And it's just stop. Just stop. All you have to do is feed your kids, check their homework. It doesn't need to be so complicated. Leave them alone. That is
yeah.
all. Let them be children.
They def want some time to do their own thing.
Yeah.
I feel like
someone in call social services now and say Gregender Bazaran's a very neglectful
mother. I did
mother.
See that there was that article online about that kid. That guy was like, I want my kids to ride the bus.
Exactly.
And everyone was like, no, they're not allowed.
It's crazy.
Well, you know,
they're not five.
Well, there's one
that's 11.
One that's younger.
Oh, one is 11?
The oldest one is 11, and he cannot be in charge of other children until he turns 12.
Okay.
Which is a ministry rule.
Okay.
Just a flat
12 out is 12 is pretty reasonable.
But there's something about, but like kids walking to school, they can walk to school by themselves at 9, but can't be in charge
I don't
of
know
children
all these rules, naturally.
Well, I worked in social services for a long time.
Yeah.
But the, yeah, anyway, it's, I don't know. It's just.
But I think that, yeah, some of that is an extension of what you're talking
totally.
About of like.
Just that's even more.
Mm-hmm. If I see another Instagram photo of like some mom's bento box lunch that she made for her kid, I'm gonna shoot
feel
somebody.
So. You know what? And I feel so bad about myself when I see that. Like my son doesn't take a lunch. I don't know what he eats. I try and make food for him, but he doesn't take it.
He doesn't want it?
No.
Oh, so he wants to buy his lunch.
Wants to buy his lunch.
Okay.
So that's fine.
Yeah.
But I don't understand these bento box lunches. I love them. I want some. You know what? Can that mom, if she's listening, can she pack my lunch?
Yeah,
like,
that does seem
I
more
need.
Fair.
Yeah, because I will appreciate it. Your children don't appreciate it.
No, they don't care. They're probably not.
They're probably just
it.
Throwing it in the bushes. That's what I used to do with my lunch.
Oh, would you wouldn't trade or anything? You'd just like not eat, or would you get something else?
It wasn't trade worthy. It was peanut butter jam, which I actually still love.
Yeah, it's
but
good.
At the time like. So many days in a row.
You're like, this is too basic. I can't have this every day.
I had like one tree every single day went into. And you know what? Somebody must have taken it, or maybe there was an animal that's always waiting for it because it was like never there. There's never like a collection of brown bags.
What?
But
there was a very well-fed raccoon.
I was very sneaky
for sure.
Because my mom would reuse the Ziploc bag, so I'd have to take the sandwich out of the Ziploc
bag. Oh, dump
bag,
it first.
Dump it with the...
That does make it more biodegradable.
Exactly.
Without the bag.
Right, because you wash the bag and reuse it.
Oh,
I'm
yeah.
I'm sure there was a raccoon. Like, you know, let's call him Smithers.
I'm sure.
Totally.
You could read a kid's book about this. It already sounds entertaining to me. Like, can't you imagine a little kid reading this thing? And, like, something would happen to the tree or, like, to the sand or whatever.
But I think even one of my sisters used to hide her dinner. Like, she would, like... throw her dinner somewhere in the house when she didn't want to eat it.
Oh my god.
My sister did that.
Yeah.
She would take 2 bites, then my mother would get up to do something and she'd dump the rest of it in my bowl, and then I was basically eating double dinners for a couple of years. That's when I grew in width.
There you go.
Yeah. What happened? I literally am eating for two, but the other one is my sister.
Yeah.
Like I'm eating her food.
Bento box mom.
That's good.
Bring me that food.
That's good. All right. Well, thanks for listening. You've been a great guest.
Yay,
you've been a great guest
time.
Host. Daniel, as always. When will you be in my arms again? Okay, thanks everyone. Bye.